This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi everyone, I'm Katrina Morrissey and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the Livestock Show. Thanks as always to Grassland Agro for helping us to make this show happen. And later in the show, we'll have a segment with John O'Loughlin. It's been a busy week on farms and I'm joined by Darren Carty, Aidan Brennan and Siobhan Walsh to chat about what's been happening. First up though is the quick fire round. So remember, you can email your question to us at farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp your questions to 086 836 6465. Darren, I've got to come to you first. First question in. I met Darren at the sheep conference in Athlone, which I thought was good. I should have asked on the night when factories are going to start recording health of livers, like is done already on the beef side. I find it useful information. Any information for that listener, Darren?
Yeah, there is a couple of factories that are doing it, Katrina, that are already doing it. There is no, I suppose, maybe central system, say, for recording it the same way as, I suppose, what Jack is writing about this week, in this it falls between a number of stools on the health side, whereas there's the beef health check on the beef side. But if the listener, say, contacts the factory, even and his animals going in, that generally, if they can at all, they would oblige him and that they would look at the health status of the livers. It mightn't come out automatically in the docket, but there should be a way of getting this done. But yeah, it's something the industry needs to push for, is to get it automatically like the beef side.
Okay, so you'd have to chase it if you want it, but it might come down the tracks.
Yeah.
Spot on. Darren, next one. Hi all, any word on how many farmers in SCEP who missed out on payment for you for QA followed through and signed up? I signed up, but I'm half sorry now that I did because I got nothing out of it and the stars seem to be a mess.
Yeah, I'm presuming when he says he got nothing out of it, he's probably a weanling producer, or she's probably a weanling producer, Katrina. We don't have figures yet. We have the question logged and hopefully we'll have something back for next week. Anecdotally, from what I'm hearing, is that there's a significant number of those 1,500 farmers that say had applied to Borbea on the 16th of October and had to be quality assured by the 16th of January. I think there's probably going to be a significant number that didn't follow through, unfortunately, but next week we'll hopefully be able to talk about it more.
Okay, answer coming next week. So next one is on Collio's. Recent questions on Collio prices have been interesting. Who is buying them in the marts if factories are only quoting less than €3 a kilo, or are the factory men getting paid a lot more? Is there any data available on what's being paid?
Interesting question. I suppose who's buying them is, there's some of them being bought for live export. Now that was more common, I'd say, maybe this time last year, and you probably will start to see that again in the lead up to Ramadan, and particularly now that prices seem to be strengthening across the water. A lot of those yos last year would have went live, say, to Britain, or they would have been killed here in the more sort of local abattoirs. That even if we look at this week's prices, the likes of ICM are only quoting 280 a kilo, whereas Ballinmeats, who would be more specialist in yours, are quoting 340 a kilo. So obviously they're paying a bit more than that. And there would be other local abattoirs that are sort of killing for niche markets. Some of those carcasses are going to Italy and France, but it's a sort of niche market thing. The same as, I suppose, the trade for very good quality cows, but that's generally who's buying them. And obviously the factory men that are buying in March are probably getting an extra touch. But if you're looking at the March trade, the factory agents for the March that are quoting lower aren't able to pay as high as the agents that are buying for those local laboratory specialists, I suppose, orders.
Okay, thanks, Darren. Aidan, I'll come to you next. A bit of a crystal ball required here for this one. So Jason's asking, what's the outlook on milk price for the first 6 months of this year and the general market outlook?
Actually, look, it's hard to say for sure, Katrina. Like, I mean, the indications are that it's getting better in terms of milk price. But that's driven, I suppose, largely by the global dairy trade auction, which has been positive for the last couple of months, really, to be honest. Since November, really, it has shot up. But what's happening in European spot market prices is the opposite. Prices have fallen significantly in the last 6 to 8 weeks. Now, there's a kind of a convergence going on. So the prices were higher in Europe. Now they're going down. Prices were lower in the GDT, and now they're going up. So they're kind of meeting in the middle somewhere. I'd be more focused on the GDT as a determinant of price and, you know, market sentiment than the spot market price in Europe. So the co-op managers, right, they're saying, you know, low 40s, 40 to 42, 43 cents a litre-ish for the next 6 months.
Okay. So reasonably steady. Next one in, Aidan, is on from Liam. Hi, guys. For private calf purchases, you know, not buying at the mart, how do you know the CBV, the commercial beef value of that calf? Can he find it on the card or where can he find it?
Yeah, so it's not on the card. You have to go and ask the farmer, I suppose, for a printout of the CBV, which will be on the Herd Plus website. It's in a number of places in the calving report. It's on it. The expected calving report has the expected CBV of the calf written on it as well. So there's a couple of places on the ICBF website where you get it on the Herd Plus website. So maybe ask the farmer for a printout of that before you go buying calves.
Okay, so you'll have to get it directly from the seller. Another Liam sent this one in. What are the new laws regarding transportation of young calves within Ireland? And PS, love the show.
Yeah, no change to the rules there, Katrina. So it's still a minimum of 10 days of age before you can move a calf off farm. I suppose from in terms of the marts, it's usually 14 days. It's not a requirement. Darren will correct me in that. But it's for the TB, for live export, they have to be minimum of 14 days. But to be honest, Katrina, like sending calves to the mart less than 40, 50 kilos, it doesn't make sense, you know, or 50 kilos anyway is kind of the new minimum for the live export. So they'd want to be, weight is as important as age. And, you know, it's 3 weeks really where you should be sending calves to mart.
Okay. Darren, take it there's no difference from you what Aidan is saying. Yep, there, no, is correct?
Yeah, spot on.
Next question, Aidan, this is about bulls. So Timmy is back, regular watcher, listener, and says, thanks for the answers last week. He's asking about the bull, Brook Lodge Pole, 1 mile of the second, great name. The dairy farmer is very happy with this bull. But the issue is we don't know if he will qualify for the new dairy scheme. They've rang the ICBF and they don't know because the terms and conditions of that scheme haven't been published yet and they don't know when they'll be published. This is a real issue, he says, that needs to be sorted soon because dairy farmers will be out buying, looking to buy bulls, and obviously this man is selling bulls.
Yeah, now I don't know, is he selling bulls or does he own, my interpretation of this is that he owns the bull. It's a stock bull. Now, I could be wrong on this. This is my interpretation. I looked up the bull in ICBF, so I think it's a stock bull. It's not owned by an AI company as of yet. Look, it has a DBI of €65, so it's low. It's not a high DBI bull. This scheme is introduced to increase the use of DBI, so I would say it would need to be in, you know, better than average anyway, and this bull is lower than average. So for me, I don't think this bull is going to qualify. I think it's more on... My interpretation of how the scheme is going to be, it's going to be on AI bred, high DBI, or AI bulls that are high DBI. That's my take on it. Now, I could be wrong, but I don't think this farmer is going to be able to get the payment in that bull. That's just a hunch.
Okay. So the bar you reckon is going to be higher than where this bull is at the moment?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Last quick fire question for you, Aidan. Can you recommend a good high flow hook applicator for using with large beef cows? I don't know, you're qualified to answer beef cow questions, are you?
Oh, sure. We'll
ask you.
They must think I'm the only one handling big cows.
The one that Thomas in County Down who sent in the question, he says the one he has is very narrow and it's hard to pump thick oil drenches through. So have you used anything that you like or?
So we have one at home, but we don't really use it that much anymore because we're not doing the old voices. We don't have to do them for fluke because thankfully we don't have much fluke. So I don't have much experience anymore. We were doing them with a hook drench, which was brilliant. But after a few years, it got stiff. Now, they are expensive enough yokes to buy. It was a good one. I think we bought it from the vets. There's a better, they'd have access to better, I think in general, better quality equipment. I could be, you know, maybe I'm being wrong by saying that some of the merchants have good equipment as well, but some of the off the shelf stuff wouldn't be good enough. And I think you're into the problem that this farmer has is that they're too narrow. The oil drenches are very viscousy, and it takes a lot of effort to get the pump up because there's quite a long distance between the trigger and the end of the hook. But look, the hook is a great job. It's much safer. You're not trying to catch cows by their heads, and being thrown around the place. So the hook is a great job. Get the hook in. The cow will generally lift her head anyway, and then you squeeze the trigger and away you go. But I'd say ask your vets for recommendations on good ones, and they could be expensive.
Okay, spot on. Thanks, Aidan. Siobhan, there's no quickfire questions for you today, so you're getting worried about murder, but we'll have plenty of questions for you in the main show, which we're going to move on to now. Darren, I'm coming back to you. Plenty of news this week as regards the new suckler scheme and the measures that are being proposed and some changes in the pipeline. Tell us what's happening there.
Yeah, this is interesting, Katrina, and I suppose timely in that there's a lot of pressure coming from farmers wanting to know, say, what's involved. We'll talk about that in a second. But essentially, the scheme that seems to be on the table is that the contentious IBR element is dropped. So I suppose, to backtrack a small bit, what we're talking about is the replacement to the National Beef Welfare Scheme. That was a scheme last year that had 35 euros, say, per calf for meal feeding up to a maximum of 40 calves. And then there was an option to get a top-up payment up to 300 euros where you carried out IBR testing, and the payment that was for doing testing on 20 animals in a herd. That seems now to have been dropped, and I'm not surprised because only 10,000 out of the 15 or 16,000 farmers followed through and did that, which is still quite, I suppose, a significant number given all the furore that was about it. What looks to be on the table now is meal feeding is still there, which is good. Meal feeding, I think, pre and post weaning, so that was where before farmers weaned their calves, they had to feed for a minimum of 4 weeks and then feed for 2 weeks after. I'd say that's a given. And what seems to be considered is vaccination protocols. And what's been talked about is possibly vaccination for viral pneumonia and Clostridial disease, with the target there being blackleg. Now, that's not known, say, yet, or that hasn't been confirmed. So I'd be slow for any farmers to go out and start thinking this. They need to go buying blackleg vaccine, or they need to go vaccinating their calves for pneumonia. Where the pressure point is coming, and why I talked about that farmers need to know, is this: previous schemes, say it was launched, I think last year in, it could have been March or April, but calves that are eligible were born from the previous 1st of July. So they say it is generally worked within a window of that. If the scheme was launched now and if it followed previous years, the calves eligible would be born from the 1st of July 2023 to the 31st or the 30th of June 2024. So obviously there's farmers with autumn.
A bit.
Exactly. So where the question marks are coming from now is farmers that have autumn-born weanlings that are coming close to weaning, are coming close in some cases to being sold, that they're starting to ask, well, I have no issue doing the meal feeding because it is good, it's good practice, and in all likelihood, if animals are housed this time of the year, weanlings are going to be getting meals, so most people are going to comply with that. The crunch point is that if there's going to be something like blackleg, or there's going to be, say, vaccination or pneumonia vaccination, is they want to have a chance of participating in that. And if they don't hear something soon, those animals could be sold and passed out of the system without getting payment. So that's where the pressure is coming from. You'd hope that something would be announced in the coming weeks that allows those animals to be captured in it. Oh, there's one actually other interesting point in it, is that farm orgs are pushing for the cap of 40 cows to be removed. So the payment last year was on a maximum of 40 calves born. They're pushing for no cap, which I think would be good, because one of the things we've seen is that in recent, I suppose, maybe cap changes, some full-time or larger scale suckler enterprises have been hit either to convergence or to capping the payments like this.
Okay. Darren, just, I suppose, bringing you back, and it's obviously all related to the same farmers, I suppose. The big news this week on the SCEP side of things was potential, like, to me, it's a rollback. I don't know how you describe it, but is it a reaction to farmer pressure?
Yeah, as you say, I don't know how it would be described. Some people yesterday would have said it was a rollback. So there was a big stakeholder meeting yesterday. Some of the breed societies would say it doesn't go far enough. Some would say it kicks the can down the road, doesn't, I suppose, address the big sort of queries that are there at the moment, and we'll have the same issue in a few years' time. I think something needed to be done, and it's interesting that the department have roared in on it, because they had previously said up to now that, I suppose, they were there to enforce the scheme, but that it was between ICBF and breeders how the ICBF indexes were defined or calculated, or that it was up to the industry to define that. But this is very much the department coming in and, I suppose, maybe taking an input. So what's being talked about is the big, I suppose, maybe consternation or the big furore has been around new indexes that came in November 2023 that would have resulted in animals both increasing or decreasing on genetic evaluation. So the Eurostar value would have gone up and down. Some bulls or some high profile bulls would have fallen significantly, and that was where the big, I suppose, maybe issues were. This allows this any progeny born to a cow that was classified on the September evaluation as 3, 4, and 5 star, that if they were mated to a bull that was classified as 4 or 5 star on the September evaluation, that even if that animal wasn't now classified as a 4 and 5 star when genotyped, that they would be eligible for SCEP going forward. They would be eligible if I sold the SCEP animal to you, being in SCEP, they would maintain their eligibility. But if I sold an animal to Aidan or Siobhan that wasn't in SCEP going forward, well, then they would lose their eligibility from SCEP. That would be the break in the link. As of how it's going to work, Katrina, I don't know, because it's probably adding a bit more confusion. Yes, it's good that, I suppose, more animals apply. We have to look into it more, but you now could, as one farmer said to me yesterday, you could have a few different indexes. So just take, for example, an animal being born this spring, that if they now have a 2-star rating, if they're genotyped as 3-star,
yeah.
And if they were from a 3, 4, 5 star cow and they apply, and from a 4 or 5 star bull, they could be in SCEP, but over the next few years, that animal is going to be breeding animals that aren't 4 or 5 star, or that they're going to be breeding animals that have a lower genetic potential. So it's sort of, this was an issue in BDGP where animals that were 4 and 5 star or genotype 4 and 5 star, they held a status. And then when we came to the end of BDGP, a lot of farmers were used to looking at just the BDGP report. And then when they got the actual Eurostar value, in particular, all the cows had dropped down to maybe 2, 3 stars by merit of the star ratings, the thresholds increasing, or by animals just falling down. And this isn't going to solve that. that, like, yeah, well, we could be let, to me, it's sort of kicking the can down the road. But I do see that something needs to be done, or something needed to be done, to try and, I suppose, maybe bring back some confidence into the SCEP program.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a lot of unhappiness there. There's a lot of pedigree unrest and whatnot. But as you say, it is almost an artificial floor put under the stars for the duration of the scheme, and that might have consequences down the line. There's going to be loads more on that, I'm sure, in the paper next week and online in between, because that only emerged in the middle of the week. So yourself and Adam Woods will be covering that. I'm going to bring you back to sheep now, Darren, and you also have news of what measures or actions farmers will have to take to be able to get €8 per yo under the new scheme.
Yeah, so there isn't as much time pressure on this as what's on the beef side, but it's good to see some progress coming, and I suppose the time pressure will build in a couple of months going on where the measures are. So the €8 a yo payment, that was announced in last year's budget. It's separate to the sheep improvement scheme. So there was a bit of confusion there that there was going to be a top-up to the sheep improvement scheme and that there was going to be a €20 per yo payment. There were some farmers who hadn't participated in the sheep improvement scheme were saying, Jeannie, now I've missed out on potentially €20. That's not going to be the case. So the sheep improvement scheme is going to continue to operate as is, €12 a yo payment. This is not going to be the same. So it's the same as the beef SCEP on one side and a beef welfare scheme. I don't know what the scheme is going to be called, but the €8 per yo payment, farmers are essentially going to have to do two actions, a category B and a category B option. What we hear is the proposals on the table is this: category A could be shearing and monitoring a bonny condition score. You'd say that's good because most people would get in under shearing because every flock, if with the exception of flocks that have wool shedding, are going to be doing some form of shearing, so that's good. And the category B option then, what's being talked about is, say, Clostridial disease vaccination or external parasite control, and in particular there, farmers getting supported for carrying out plunge dipping. So whether it be on their own regard or whether they get, say, a mobile plunge dipper in, that's what we believe, Katrina. Now, the full details of it has to come, along with there's a lot of questions on what year is going to be used for payment. I'd say it's probably going to be either the most recent year or I'd say the most recent sheep census or a combination of your numbers on an average of those, like what you use with the sheep improvement scheme. But good to see that the measures being talked about here are practical. Minister McConnellogue spoke last week at the Chagas Sheep Conference in Donegal. He was coy on mentioning what was in it. He didn't mention the measures there, but what he did say is that his target was that any sheep scheme would be practical and of great importance, that the wouldn't be a big cost to compliance, because some of the schemes, I think that's what we need, is that farmers are supported for the work they do, but that they don't have to put their hand very deep in their pocket and call out to some of the payments.
Okay, so two good upsides there, Darren. It's practical measures and it's a standalone scheme, so you won't have missed out if you didn't go into the sheep improvement scheme. Tell me, the mart trade is going a little bit ahead of factory trade for lambs and a bit more life there for the ewes as well. What's the general outlook like on prices?
Yeah, so what we've seen this week is factories, I suppose, trying to batten down the hatches. There was no movement in base quotes. So base quotes are anywhere from 665 to 680 a kilo. You'd say at the moment, Katrina, base quotes are only there for producer groups. They're irrelevant nearly for anyone else that's selling. So the groups that are working on behalf of on the average of a payment plus a bonus, I think that's why some of the factories are keeping base quotes low, because there's no sheep movement at 665, 670 a kilo. The majority of lambs that are trading from what I classify as sellers with less negotiating power are moving somewhere from 690 to €7 a kilo. And in regular sellers, groups, agents handling bigger numbers are anywhere from 7 to 720. What I would say to farmers that have less negotiating power or maybe being offered lower prices is the mart trade has probably moved a touch ahead of the factory trade. So it mightn't suit everyone to go down that route with I suppose, maybe working or what type of part of the country you're in, but it's something to be cognizant of as well. Or the big option, or the big, I suppose, maybe change we've seen this week is that the store lamb trade has taken off. As one farmer said, everybody wants to have sheep when they're deer, and that's definitely the case this week. Store lambs will be up 5 to 8 euros ahead. But I think that the biggest signal from that is a sign of sort of positive sentiment, because you're seeing specialist finishers that are killing lambs, coming out and restocking. And all indications will be is that there's going to be a good solid trade for the next few months. And like, we're looking at Ramadan starting in March. I think that factories are already talking about concerns around where sheep numbers are coming from. Last week, sheep kill dropped by 5,000 head, despite prices going up. So I think definitely the dynamics of supply and demand are on the farmers, on the selling point of farmers. And the last point I'd say in it is for farmers to watch the trade, because it is moving. And from a Thursday to a Monday or to the later in the week, there could be significant changes. So followed update we have online on a Monday night, or obviously we'll have regular updates if there's any significant change online in the trade.
Perfect. Darren, in Adam's absence, the beef price and mark trade, Carnew had some savage prices this week, did they?
Yeah, I was talking to David Quinn. I was actually doing that report myself, so I'm familiar with it. And he said it was a record for the mart. Like, he said there was the top priced animal hit 3,600 for an 878 kilo bullock. Now, I'm all a slow to throw out the top prices, because it can be so far forward, there can be one animal. But if you take that there was 40 animals selling over 2.5 grand, the average price for almost 300 cattle in excess of 600 kilos is 305 a kilo. Now, that's a very good average price when you take that there's Angus cattle thrown in there, there's Hereford cattle thrown in there, and like, phenomenal trade. There's continental bullocks, heavily fish continental bullocks, making anywhere from 3 euros up to 330, 340 kilo. Angus and Herefords anywhere from sort of 275 to 3 euros a kilo for flesh types. And like, agents arguing at the ringside for cattle. Northern buyers very active as well. Finishers that are active for, say, forward, keep cattle, all active too. And we've seen that it's not just Carnew. We've seen right across, I suppose, the country. Shannon Kinnan's analysis this week on the mark bids prices would show that heavy, say, factory fit cattle forward stores are probably up 5 to 8 cents on the week on average. And there seems to be real life in the trade for weanlings. Some of the mark managers will be telling us that farmers that will be buying for summer grazing systems, or that will be buying maybe in March, cattle that they're out buying now, maybe earlier, that they see that the trade could strengthen as the year goes on, and they want to try and insulate themselves. So that's good as well. Numbers aren't big, but there's a steady flow of animals moving through the marts. And one thing that is sure, or that is evident, is that there is more sort of factory fit stock, and in particular maybe animals that would be deemed out of spec, maybe over 30 months or even over 36 months, or non-quality short herds. There is some of those now appearing, more doors appearing in March, because there is such demand and farmers seem to be getting away well with those. Very quickly on beef prices, like 515 to 520 of a base for steers, 520 to 525 for heifers. Phelan is reporting this week flat price deals anywhere up to 550, 560 for Angus and Hereford stocks. So real bite in the trade there. We've seen the cow trade, real solid trade, 460 to 480 a kilo for real good cows, and even sort of pea and oil grading cows anywhere from 410 up to 440 a kilo. So real bite, Katrina, and Everton would sort of point to it being positive. Now, factories have moved to try and take that bit of, I suppose, maybe the energy in the trade that was there last week. There is some people sort of saying that there's concerns with new Brexit rules coming in, or that maybe plants just took the foot off the pedal this week until they see how they operated. But I think that can't be used as any excuse for the demand. There is serious demand across the water from Britain, and good demand right across Europe. So there's no warning signals there on beef price that we can see at the moment.
Good news, good news. The very last thing, Darren, is there any deadlines for schemes or anything that we need to be thinking about in the next week or two?
Yeah, good point, Katrina. Sorry, I forgot that. The Register of Power Partnerships, the deadline is the 10th of February. Now, that's, I suppose, a strange one. In the farm, registered farm partnership applications will be accepted right across the year, but the deadline of the 10th of February is if you want to have a BIS number. So if I wanted to go into, say, partnership with another farmer and put in a BIS application this year, that has to be in by the 10th of February. So that's coming very quick. And then SCEP data for 2023 data, the final date for that to be accepted is the 15th of February. So important for farmers to get any outstanding data up to submit at ICBF on that.
Brilliant. So registered farm partnerships, 10th of February, SCEP survey data, 15th of February. Don't forget Valentine's Day in the middle, 14th of February. Okay, thanks, Darren. Aidan, I'll come to you next. Nitrates, derogation, like so much happening every week, but you have a big story in this week's paper. What's happened? You know, bring us up to speed there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose think back to when the Commissioner came to Ireland, the Commissioner for the Environment, the European Commissioner for the Environment, and he said at the meetings he had with farm orgs and department and industry representatives was that if Ireland has stable water quality, we'll retain the derogation. And this was the line that was given. I suppose what has since transpired, and I've been hearing this bits and bobs over the last few weeks, is that when the Irish officials went back to commission officials to, you know, get this in writing or, you know, get some more clarity on it, they said, oh yeah, stable water quality is, you know, I'm paraphrasing now, stable water quality is fine, but you have to, it has to be meeting the water framework directive conditions. Now,
so what's
they're extremely difficult to achieve the targets set down in the water framework directive, which is to have good ecological and chemical status in all water bodies by 2027. Now, that's across Europe. Of all the countries in Europe, Ireland would probably be one of the best in terms of hitting those targets, but we won't meet them either. You know, we'll hit them in some places, but we won't, the whole country won't hit that. So really, you know, that means then if we're not hitting those water framework directive targets, there are going to be additional measures employed in order to assist us to hit those. And, you know, the assumption here is that the derogation is in threat in those parts of the country that don't meet those requirements, and which would, you know, cover all the southeast, you know, where the cows are basically. But nobody is saying this officially. And for me, I think we need to be really careful here in giving farmers, you know, honest advice around what's actually likely to happen. And I'm not saying the derogation is going to go, because there's a lot of other things that could happen. Like political pressure could be applied to take this off the table. Who knows? There's changes coming down the line in terms of the nitrates directive itself. It's open for public consultation. Maybe they're going to change some of the rules slightly. But like either way, I mean, I think now is a time to put all the information out there. We have 2 years almost before the end of the current derogation, and you know, we need politicians, we need officials from all walks of life in government to put their shoulders to the wheel and make sure that the derogation is retained. Because one of the, I suppose, go back to the water framework directive rules, like it's not fair to say that agriculture is the only, you know, player contributing to poor water quality. So why then? But we're the ones, I suppose, that are at the coal face of this. So dairy farmers in the main are those that are the ones in derogation. And they're going to, you know, it's so, like, it's as Jim Bergen says, it's catastrophic if we lose the derogation. I mean, it's unbearable to even think about it, what the implications would be if we didn't have a derogation by 2029. Dairy farming would not be what it is today without the derogation. There'd be massive job losses right across rural Ireland. The price of milk would fall because the supply through co-ops and processors would fall off a cliff. It's carnage. Like, I don't think people realize that. Like, I don't think politicians fully understand that. And I mean, it's not right to say that, and I accept this, you know, that you can't put a price in the environment. You know, I mean, if I say, oh, it's going to be catastrophic economic impacts, people will come back to me and say, well, she can't put a price on water quality and ensuring, you know, we've good water quality and all the rest. And that's fine. But very few other sectors are going to suffer as much as dairy farmers will suffer if the derogation is lost. And the derogation itself has such a minimal impact on water quality. It's such a bitter pill to swallow if this happens.
And Aidan, there's a risk, isn't there? And we were talking about this in the office. Like, there's a risk that farmers get the false hope that when Commissioner Sinkevicius said stable water quality would be enough to keep the derogation, that was kind of a bit of chink of light for that. We'd been told it had to be improving in those areas. Stable felt like, okay, in the time, basically, the Water Framework Directive private is going to override that. It may not matter. We'll be too concentrated on what's happening with the derogation that it's all almost irrelevant if the much harder to reach water framework targets override it almost.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's up to politicians to make sure that doesn't happen. You know, I mean, it's in their power to influence the people in the commission to say, okay, we need a plan here. We need a 10-year plan for water quality. Okay, we need to make improvements in these areas, and this is how we're going to do it. The current model around, you know, reviewing the derogation every 4 years is too short. And like, you're asking farmers now, and I hear Ted Massey and other officials in the department and the minister himself encouraging farmers to go out and spend money on slurry storage if they require it. And that's fine. You know, that's all well and good. That may be so. But are we now, am I going to tell farmer to put up a slurry storage, spend 50,000-60,000 euros on a tank, but you mightn't have the cows that need that slurry in the tank to fill the tank in 3 or 4 years' time? And why are you building a white elephant in that case? Like, so for me, it's we just need to have an honest conversation around what's actually likely to happen. And for me, there's a big risk now that the derogation will be lost if this water framework proviso is included in the derogation mix.
Okay. I'm sure you'll be covering that over the coming weeks anyway, online and in print. I'm going to switch topics a little bit here. Calving, progressing. And we'd, I suppose, an interesting development there in terms of the calf sales as regards to what Cork Marts are doing. How is it going across the country? Any major issues out there on farms, or is it all going well so far?
Sure, it's early days yet. Like, you know, we're only the second or third day of February. But like the next couple of weeks will be mad busy. Needless to say, across the country. But hey, look, I mean, in the main, the weather hasn't been that bad. We've had wet days, but we've had dry days as well, which is a help in terms of getting a few of those freshly calved cows out to grass. And that's, you know, getting the sheds cleared is a big help. But look, I mean, in the main, cows are in good condition. I would say that's a big help. You know, heading into calving, because They're stronger, they've better ability to calve. So no, it's early days, as I say, but things seem to be going fairly well. Farmers are well prepared now. We've additional calf sheds built and calf housing. Back to the Cork Marts movement. Yeah, look, to be honest, like it'll affect a very small number of calves, our farmers, like, because the majority of them go to the mart and are sold. I suppose what we had in the past is that some calves that were poorer quality couldn't be sold, and then they were left in the mart for longer. The mart was ringing up the farmer to say, "Hey, you want to take these calves? What's happening here?" And then they're trying to find someone to buy them. And when that happens, then you're in a problem, you know. I suppose what we saw last year in terms of the Prime Time Investigates program on calves, anything like that, you know, looks awful on the camera. I suppose this is one effort, I suppose, to try and prevent that from happening. So €5 a calf is a small charge, really. For a calf that's not sold, but it's a deterrent at the same time.
Yeah, and it's the deterrent for the small number that do that. But nonetheless, an important signal for the industry, and given that Cork Marts handle so many calves, I think it's positive myself to see him kind of leading the way and saying, look, this has to, you know, take more responsibility, and we won't be chasing you for the unsold calves. Lastly, Aidan, fertiliser spreading season is officially open, but is it a bit early to be going out with the spreader?
Yeah, it depends on where you are. I suppose I'm chatting to John O'Loughlin on this later on in the show, but it depends on where you are in the country and how likely you are that you're going to utilise that grass that's grown. When I say utilise, I mean graze it. So there's no point in spreading fertiliser in early February if you're not going to get your cows out until end of March or after St. Patrick's Day, because the extra growth you're going to make from that grass isn't utilised effectively. So But for those that want to go out grazing, have dry land, have the cows calved, are set up for it, then the early spring fertilizer application does grow more grass than spreading more fertilizer in March in comparison. So there's a move, I suppose, Katrina, in the last year or two to say, well, we're not going to spread in January, which is now not allowed. And I'm not going to spread in February. They're going to wait till March until soil temperatures are up. You'll grow less grass, between 300 to 500 kilos a hectare over the year, and you won't make it up later on in the year. So my advice is, get the fertilizer in the yard and spread 20 to 23 units per acre of urea, and you'll be better off.
Okay. Thanks very much, Aidan. Siobhan, I'm going to come to you, and a very busy week on the tillage front. Let's go first. I suppose you were looking at the latest planting survey. Not a great outlook there. Tell us about the highlights or the lowlights, as it may be.
Yeah, definitely not, Katrina. Look, we've been writing about this in the paper extensively. Chagas had estimated before Christmas that we were down about 35,000 hectares of winter crops. So this survey now has been carried out by Chagas over the last, up until mid-January is when it stopped. And so it has about 30,000 hectares are covered in the survey, about 461 farmers, I think it is. So it is a comprehensive survey, and it shows that only 62% of the planned winter cereal area went into the ground. So of about 130,000 hectares, only about 80,000, just over 80,000 went into the ground. So back dramatically, and going to have knock-on effects for the rest of the year. Some parts of the country then affected worse than others. Like at the tillage conference yesterday, and we have this covered in the paper as well. You know, there was videos from farmers, Tom Short in Wicklow and Tom Nolan in County Wexford. And the east of the country is really badly affected here, because they just seem to got way more rain. So Tom Short had only managed to get 45% of his winter crops in. I think Tom Nolan had 30% of his winter crops in. And then both of them, after the crops went in, they had about 10 inches of rain in the month following. So crops are in a really bad situation then as well. So some of these crops may have to be resown. Resowing obviously brings with it added cost, but then we can't leave crops not sown. We can't need bare patches for conditionality. Look, we're back on winter cropping area, and I suppose this is mainly a livestock show, so what that means for other people is last year our winter area was back. We had a bad autumn. This year it's back as well, so we're back in total over 51,000 hectares of winter cereals, we think, at the minute. So that has, so regards straw and everything, Katrina, there's going to be huge shortages there next winter.
And there are huge shortages at the minute. So you were talking about a worse situation. You know, we like, you know, in the office, we're talking about people crying out for straw, and the tillaging corporation scheme getting blamed for a lot of things on the livestock side. But you're saying it'll be worse. Like this year's bad, next year it'll be worse.
If we look at a winter barley crop, a farmer could have 14, 15 bales to the acre off their winter barley. You put that into spring barley and you could be, look, you're talking maybe an average of 8, 9, 10, but you could be down to 6 on some crops. Now, last year was exceptional because the weather just was bad in every way for crop growth. So, like, hopefully the straw situation in the season to come won't be as bad as this season. You know, the reason we have the shortage now is not because of the strong cooperation scheme. The reason we have the shortage is because we didn't get the winter cropping area in.
Yeah.
And then when we did get, like, we had more than 100,000, 130,000 hectares of spring barley, but that spring barley was planted in April and May, and they were really bad crops. Then when they were planted, there was drought, so they didn't grow. And then when they were harvested, not all of those, like, there was people, we had pictures of people baling there in the middle of January, wasn't it? Down in County Wexford. So tillage farmers still trying to get straw off the ground, and still plenty of it lying around at the minute. So last year hopefully was an exception.
Weather-wise,
we don't get that disastrous weather again. Like the straw scheme, really, most of the straw that goes into that scheme, there was about 70,000 hectares last year, about 13,000 hectares that is oilseed rape. And then the bulk of the 56,000, there would be quite a lot of nearly all of the oats area in the country, would be going into the straw scheme. So the oats would nearly take up almost 50% maybe of the area. So I was at the Fodder and Food Security Committee meeting last week, and the straw situation came up. You know, Vincent Roddy in the NHFA was very concerned about it. The ICSA brought it up, the ICMSA. And they are importing straw at the minute. They're afraid those imports will run out. But look, tillage farmers know how serious that situation is. And, you know, if they had straw in the shed, they'd find it. I suppose what did come out of that meeting was, and TJ Maher from the IFA brought this up, you know, he said livestock farmers need to get their act together if they want straw, because there is a kind of a thing there. Well, I'll just buy my straw when I need it, or maybe the price will go down in the winter time. But if you do leave it, you know, the strong corporation scheme is there and the tillage farmers can use it and they're perfectly entitled to use it. But they won't use it if you order the straw. So that's just something to know. Plan ahead, at least buy some or order some of your straw requirements before the chopper is turned on. And, you know, June is the date for cutoff of taking parcels out of that. You can take parcels out later in certain circumstances. You know, if there's a straw shortage, the department aren't going to give out to anyone for taking out a parcel. Just, you know, try and do it early on in the season and get your straw ordered.
Siobhan, you were telling me that the Chagas Tillage Conference on the day was that integration of
Katrina,
livestock.
Can you start
tillage.
That from the beginning?
That's what you're talking about there on the straw, but there's more. I can, yeah.
Thanks. Sorry, just because it was breaking up. Yeah, it was just breaking up. Thank you.
Sorry. Okay. Siobhan, you were telling me you were at the Chagas Tillage Conference on Wednesday, and you know, straw is part of this. One of the major topics at the conference was that integration between livestock and tillage. What other areas were being talked about, and what needs to happen on that front?
Yeah, so Tillage Conference was very good this year. It was a change of format. So we had a session in the afternoon, if you wanted to attend it. We had different sessions, you know, on disease and grass weeds and all that kind of thing. But then there was one on integration between livestock and tillage farmers and what can be done. So in that session, we had Lawrence Chaloux from Moor Park, David Wall from Johnston Castle, and a farmer, Tom Barry, from County Cork. And Tom's a signpost farmer and would take in quite a lot of slurry from livestock farmers. I think 90% of what he takes in is pig slurry, but he also takes in slurry from dairy farmers. But it's what came up first, I suppose, was Lawrence Chaloux said, look, dairy farmers have to use all options available to them with the new nitrates. So, you know, he said maybe they'll reduce their crude protein if that comes to pass. Maybe they'll reduce their unproductive stock numbers, maybe they'll reduce their cow numbers, but they also exporting slurry is another option. And I asked Lawrence, do dairy farmers want to give away their slurry? Because that's something tillage farmers would always say, like, oh, sure, the dairy farmers don't actually want to give us their slurry. But dairy farmers are now in a position where a lot of them are going to have to. I suppose the theme was to try and, you know, try and get people to work together, that maybe if you're going to take slurry, you're going to grow a crop of maize from that slurry, or you're going to grow some other forage crop, or maybe you'll have an agreement for straw instead of the slurry. Like Tom Barry was just saying, he actually gets paid for taking in slurry. He didn't like to put the word gate fee on it, but, you know, he basically said, well, it's a lot cheaper to export slurry than it is to rent land. So, you know, a farmer could rent land to put out their stock and range over a greater area. But he was just saying it's, you know, I heard prices yesterday of land down around Cork, €400 or €500 per acre. So it's a lot cheaper to pay him €150 to take in slurry than to rent the land. I know maybe some people won't agree with that, but he just said, look, there is a cost in him taking it in. He doesn't need to take it in. Obviously, he wants to take it in. It's good for his farm. But, you know, he has a reception tank that he's built to take in this slurry. The umbilical system costs €150 per hour or whatever. But he has a very good system built up. You know, he's testing the slurry. He has trusted suppliers and everything. And I think that's key, that everyone in the system knows that, you know, they're all working together for the benefit of the farms involved.
Interesting there from Aidan and John on the fertilizer. Right, folks, that's it for this week's Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks very much to Grassland Agro for helping to make it happen, as always. Thanks to my guests, Darren, Aidan and Siobhan. Thanks to you for tuning in. And remember, you can get in touch with all your questions, whether that's by email or WhatsApp. The email is farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie and the text or WhatsApp number is 086-836-6465. Don't forget, you can listen back to any of our Farm Tech Talks or podcasts by going to ifj.ie/podcast. Jack Kennedy will be back in the hot seat next week, but until then, take care and safe farming.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.